And now, capturing human likeness on a whole other level.
Nice to see a familiar face.
It should be.
How rude.
I believe the quantum fissure we discovered is a fixed point across the space-time continuum.
Wally.
From C-3PO to Wall-E, lovable robots have squeaked their way into the hearts and minds of audiences and readers. Over the past few years, thousands of varieties of real-life robots have jumped from the screen into homes, hospitals, and fields of combat. As the presence of these socially responsive robots grows, so does the human tendency to anthropomorphize their mechanical companions. Joining us to discuss the growing phenomenon of robot-human bonding is Robert Ito. He wrote about the topic for Pacific Standard Magazine. Robert, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Oh, thank you.
You recently had your own experience of bonding with a robot. Will you tell us a little bit about Bandit?
Bandit is a robot that was developed at USC, and it's used in sort of a variety of different therapeutic ways, and one of them is working with stroke victims. So I went in there and basically just tried to do some of the exercises with him. It was interesting because it was sort of a stripped-down brand of him. He didn't really communicate that much. But just having him in the room, you certainly felt this presence. And that's sort of what got me, I think, interested in this topic.
What does Bandit look like?
In terms of socially assistive robots, he actually does look somewhat human. He has a round face. He's got very anime-looking, the big round eyes. He's got a nice smile. He's sort of what you would imagine a robot would look like watching it on, you know, sci-fi films.
Well, there are so many robots that are assisting now with, as you said, therapeutic reasons for stroke, patients with Alzheimer's, PTSD. And you write about the surprising level of affection that people bestow upon these even simplistic robots. How do people think of them?
I mean, that's a really interesting question because one of the reasons that these engineers and robot designers are sometimes surprised at how people react to them is that they're not really designing them to be likable or lovable. Their primary goal is to create a robot that does what they want it to do. You want it to speak. You want it to raise its arm. You want it to react to certain cues. And the main goal isn't necessarily to create something that a human is going to like. I think there are certain things that, you know, people react to. They react to it just as I did, the big eyes, the round face, the sort of simple features.
So these human-like and animal-like characteristics, I guess, play into the attraction. But you spoke with a number of people who are actually studying this bond. Now, is there any real problem with having a patient or a soldier or people in general, I guess, having feelings for their robots?
Well, I think, you know, there are these sort of ethical concerns because they're falling for these robots that really can't return any of their feelings. And I think there's a certain contingent in the field that considers that creating these robots is inherently unethical because you're sort of tricking people into believing that these things have emotions. But on the most basic level, you have machines who are sort of batting their eyes at you, saying they love you, helping you. I mean, who wouldn't fall for someone, you know, or something like that? One possible fix, of course, is that you make them less human.
But Robert, you spoke to people who, you know, feel this way about their Roombas. You know, they're just as, you know what I mean? It's not that selective.
Right. Oh, yeah. And that's absolutely true. And in terms of the Roombas, so many of them, they have no idea why they fall for these things. I mean, that was, I think, one of the things that I got the most from them was, I don't know why I'm naming him. I don't know why I bought these clothes for him.
I mean, bought these clothes for the Roomba? Well, it just strikes me as, you know, we're projecting something. I guess there's a sort of need for companionship if, you know, something that doesn't even look human or open its eyes. I mean, there's a photograph in the article, the Lovebot, of this Japanese seal, Pero. It looks like a plush toy. I mean, that looks adorable and cute, but I can't imagine embracing. And you talk about people embracing, wanting to hug their robots.
Right. Well, I think part of that, too, is just simple gratitude. I mean, in terms of the Roombas, you know, you talk to them, they're just happy that somebody's helping with a house clean. In terms of, you know, these sort of bomb-diffusing robots, you know, in that case, it's certainly gratitude because these are saving people's lives. And so I think that also comes into the mix as well.
You mean you found soldiers that have affection for their bomb-diffusing robots?
Yes. I mean, and that had come out a while back where sometimes, of course, yeah, as you would imagine, the bomb-diffusing robots get blown up. And these Marines became very attached to them and saw them, you know, certainly as, I think, fellow warriors. And, you know, they, I think they went through a certain mourning period because here are these robots that had served alongside of them, and they had, you know, effectively died.
Well, when you spent time with Bandit, did you worry about getting carried away?
No, not really, just because I knew it was going to be sort of a limited experience. But I think it's what, one of the things that was sort of interesting to me was that it's not just the patients that sort of form these bonds. As one might sort of expect, some of the creators and engineers of these robots also start feeling, feelings of affection for them. And part of that is because, you know, they do spend so much more time than I would ever spend with these robots. But then also they were their creators. And so in terms of seeing them, they might, you know, perhaps see them as their own children.
Mm. Robert Ito, I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Robert Ito is a writer for Pacific Standard Magazine, where we found his article, The Love Bot. There's a link to read it at wordofmouthradio.org. With that, the magic spell is cast and draws to a close for another week of Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Thanks so much for joining us and for just an hour putting on a pair of rose-colored glasses. Please join us again for more Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio.
Word of Mouth is produced by Taylor Quimby,
Zach Nugent,
Virginia Prescott,
and senior producer Rebecca Lavoie.
With web support from Sarah Plort.
Andrew Perella, that's me,
provides technical support.
And Dan Kogan runs our board.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR.
Its board of trustees or its underwriters.
That's right, right.
For information about the show, to subscribe to our podcast, post a comment, or to read our blog,
go to wordofmouthradio.org.
Or join our community of listeners on Facebook at Word of Mouth Radio.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Word of Mouth.
Word of Mouth is a production.
Word of Mouth is a production.
Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Hold me close and hold me fast. The magic spell you cast. This is Lovey and Rose. When you kiss me, heaven sighs. And though I close my eyes, I see Lovey and Rose. When you press me to your heart, and in a world apart.